Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Hoo-wah! The Frontlines of Freedom teams really appreciate you joining us this proud day in America. Here's what we have for you this hour. We're going to start by talking with Colonel Sam Thiessen about driving critical race theory and similar falsehoods from our military. Then Army vet Dr. John Littell will discuss the abuse of our medical personnel. And of course, we'll conclude with our military history and our self-defense report. So it's a pleasure to welcome back retired Army Colonel Sam Thiessen. Sam, we've done a lot together. We're both West Point grads, served in the Army. Start by telling us a little bit about your time in the Army. When and why did you join? What were some of your interesting appointments?
Denny, great to be with you again. And I graduated from the academy in 73, started right out of high school when I was 18. And then I went infantry, and we had a similar start at Fort Carson, 4th ID, here a little bit before my time, but not that much before. You're a Vietnam vet. I'm not. Graduating in 73, you'll recall that in April of that year, President Nixon pulled our troops out. So it was a post-Vietnam war period. I would still say it was a Vietnam era. And of course, I was at along with my classmates at the academy during Vietnam, and we fully expected to go there. But it wound down, probably not like everyone hoped it would. But anyway, that there was a malaise, I would say, and I think you can vouch for this too, right after Vietnam, because we didn't win the war like we won World War II. And kind of the same thing happened in Korea, although I think we had the armistice there, which still stands in Korea. It was a better resolution than what happened 2 years later in 1975 when the North moved into Saigon. Anyway, I had a time at Fort Carson, and it was several assignments there that were enjoyable, but it was a time when there were a lot of rifts going on. It was not a very positive experience from the standpoint of, oh, this is going to be a great career. And a lot of my classmates and myself included had second thoughts. And so I got out, left early to go to graduate school, but I kept my reserve commission and got an MBA at the University of Iowa. I'm from Iowa. Came back in several years later when the economy wasn't doing all that great during the Reagan administration, but was brought in originally as a Title 10 reserve officer with the selective service system. And I had what you'd call a second career in the Army with selective service. My final assignment, my terminal assignment when I retired in 2000, after 27 years of service, both active duty and reserve, but I got almost 21 years of active duty. My terminal assignment was as a region director here in Denver, Selective Service Region 3. Which there are only three regions in Selective Service, and the organization still exists as a independent agency. The head of the Selective Service System, the director, reports directly to the president. Just a matter of trivia, Denny, how many people do you think the Selective Service has drafted over the years?
Wow.
Do you have any idea?
Not a clue.
Well, let me tell you, the number is zero. Selective Service does not draft people. The Department of Defense drafts people. The Selective Service registers calls and classifies the people. And there was a big brouhaha after Vietnam because the reserves were never called up during that war, like they had been, of course, in World War II. And so there was a total revamp of the system. It's much fairer now than it was. And it wouldn't say it was unfair during Vietnam, but it sure had the perception, people burning their draft cards and that sort of thing. So I've been retired now since 2000. My brothers and I have an alternative energy company back in the Midwest that is mostly now, we just maintain our patents. We have several patents and we license them to people. And it's a company. We hope it makes money, but we spend a lot of money too. So hopefully we'll have productive blue sky activity here in the not too distant future. But things are going fine with that. But I do spend a lot of time working on volunteer activities with the Association of the U.S. Army. I'm a past region president, and I've also been a chapter president and a state president for AUSA.
Good. Okay, Sam. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Colonel Sam Thiessen. Sam, one of the things you're involved in right now is you're on a committee of retired officers called STARS. And STARS stands for Stand Together Against Racism and Radicalism in the Services. Well, racism and radicalism occurs everywhere all the time in tiny bits. It's certainly in the services is not very, I'm not sure I was ever aware of it, but there has to be a little bit somewhere. But now that kind of stuff is being forced on everybody, sort of nonstop orientations and teachings to everybody in the services, including to our military academies. Now, we've discussed this before, but it's not stopping, is it?
Well, you're absolutely right. Not only is it not stopping, all the services, the Army relies more on recruiting for an all-volunteer force than the others because it's a larger service. But all the services are having great problems recruiting. And I mentioned the Association of the U.S. Army, and that organization really tries to help out the recruiting command to recruit soldiers. But they've got a lot of headwind there, both AUSA and even more so the recruiters, because of this critical race theory. And I will add the DEI, or diversity, equity, and inclusion. It used to be diversity and inclusion, but they threw equity in so that there would be equal outcomes. Now, when you start doing that, based on your race, and in some cases your gender, you have to make some allowances for differences. And we were talking a bit about men and women and transgender, and how some men are allowed in the shower room with women in high schools and colleges. Well, now the same is about to happen, if it hasn't already, in the military. Well, what young woman is going to want to join the service, be it the Army or Navy or Air Force, but if they have to look forward to showering with the males? And even more so, what parent is going to have their daughter be subjected to that? This sort of thing is pervasive throughout society right now. And it's bad for morale, and you have people that would otherwise be interested in signing up and being a volunteer to serve, but they're looking elsewhere now. And I've heard of so many veterans like you and I say that they would not advise young people to go into the military right now because of that. Well, when you have influencers like you and I are, and many other veterans, who know what it's like and had a good experience, and mine was a very good experience, 27 years, and I know yours was too, then, and they're those people, we are telling young people, well, you know, it's not the best time to go into the service of your country, where you might be called upon to give up your life for something that many people are saying is not worth giving your life up for anymore.
There's a lot more to talk about that. Really, it falls into the STARS category. Sam's going to stay with us. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time to balance on one foot for 3 minutes and do the same thing on the other foot. Do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. Sam and I will be right back. Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today on Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with Colonel Sam Thiessen on the radicalism and racism our military leadership is forcing on our troops. Sam, we were talking about that at the end of the last segment. It's ridiculous. Why would we teach, one, critical race theory is not true. That doesn't mean there's not some truth in it, but it's not true. America was founded on freedom and being free. And if you look at our history, particularly if you're talking about racism, 1948, President Truman desegregated the military. In 1964, the Civil Rights Act passed. Now we're in 2023. That's all baloney. Yet it's not even accurate history, much less accurate of anything for true. And why would anybody, particularly a minority, who thought that our whole country has been racist from its founding, why would they want to give their lives in defense of it? This is all nonsense. Does any of it make any sense to you?
Well, I tell you, it doesn't. And for that reason, I have been involved with STARS, as you mentioned, Stand Together Against Racism and Radicalism in the Services, which the General Rod Bishop is the chairman of the organization, a good friend of mine, and as is Ron Scott. They're both Air Force Academy graduates. Dr. Colonel Scott is the president of the organization, and they ran across some problems at the academy with the athletic department, in particular the football staff, going out in support of Black Lives Matter. And they didn't realize that Black Lives Matter, when I say they, I mean the football staff at the Air Force Academy, didn't realize that it's a front for communism, for Marxism. And CRT, as you mentioned, critical race theory, is just another, it's an angle by those on the left who want to change the country from being the republic that we are, where the individual is the people are in charge of the government and the government is not in charge of the people. Whereas Marxism and CRT looks at it the other way around, that government is everything. It replaces, in a sense, what you and I would call God, and government becomes God. So the STARS organization has been around now since, it started in 2001, and its focus has become more focused, I would say, on, and had some a good deal of success in getting some changes here to the laws one very good one, I believe, that they worked on with Senator Cotton was changing the National Defense Authorization Act to eliminate some of this transgender stuff that we talked about earlier. And it continues, STARS continues to work in that regard. So there is a strong effort, generally speaking, that is growing. You have, I believe, know of Tony Lentini. He's a West Point class of 71, who has been working with a group of us West Point graduates to work on a similar organization to STARS. The planned name for it is the West Point MacArthur Society. Now, there are West Point societies all around the world. This would be one that focuses mostly on making sure that we maintain the traditions of West Point, but not just the traditions, that also uphold the Constitution that we all take an oath to when we join the service, when we enter West Point, and then, of course, when we became officers. And even enlisted folks take an oath to the Constitution. It's a little bit different than officers, but essentially the same. And the efforts by the left to push CRT to the country as a whole, but in particular now focusing on the military as one of the last bastions of the founders and the founding intent outlined in the Declaration of Independence and then codified in the U.S. Constitution.
You're absolutely right. We have to stop that, and we have to stop it now. When I was in the Army, and I'm sure it was when I didn't promote sergeants and privates and corporals based on their race. I did it basically on their ability. How good were they at doing what they were doing? I don't think that I saw officers being promoted for any other reason than ability. And my gosh,
you're absolutely right there.
To promote somebody because you don't have enough Hispanic or Black or Asian sergeants or colonels or generals is ridiculous. I mean, if you were getting ready to have eye surgery, would you want them to pick the surgeon that was the right color or the most skilled?
I mean, certainly not. Or a pilot. Who do you want flying your jet? You're going across country. We talked about DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. Who can argue with diversity and inclusion? You can't. It's a good thing. Of course it is. But when you start talking about equity, what you're really talking about is making the selections based on what you just pointed out, not upon merit, but based on the color of your skin. And forget about whether you can do the job or not. And we see a lot of this happening throughout government, but it's happening in the military. They are promoting folk based primarily in some cases on their color and not whether they can do the job or not, or whether and maybe they can do the job, but they might not be the best person for that particular job at this point in time. And that really detracts it from morale in the services. And we get back to what we were talking about before, the transgender issue, which is a negative for morale. Well, also promotion based on skin color or ethnicity and not on merit is a very negative thing for folks.
Why would you recommend anybody, much less your kids or your kids' friends or your relatives, to go into a military, the leadership of which is not chosen on ability? I mean, that's outrageous. Sam, we're about out of time. Is STARS something that the public can know about, get involved in, support?
Absolutely. STARS it represents all services, but the public, of course, that is where we get service members from in an all-volunteer force. So if you want to learn more about STARS, we have a great website, and it's at STARS, STARS.us. Go to STARS.us, and you will see what we're involved with. I happen to be the VP for education, and we have an outreach in that regard. But the organization also works with Congress people and with legislators in other states. But that you can donate there, and we're always looking for financial support to make sure we can get the word out. And it's a very worthwhile organization, and I encourage everyone to go to the site and see what STARS is all about.
I encourage that, too. That's incredible. Sam, thank you. Thank you for your service to our nation in uniform, but thank you especially for what you're doing now. This is incredible. Hey, I'm going to have you back on. We'll talk about the Selective Service System again. That's going to be interesting. Thank you, Sam, for joining us. I appreciate you, bro.
Thank you. Thank you, Denny. Look forward to it.
Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, Dr. John Hughes will discuss the abuse of our medical people. Then we'll open our weekly mailbag. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troop, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Just do a dozen with each arm twice. Then take a break and stay in the area. I'll be right back.
HealthVet.net is here to help all veterans, active military, and families. HealthVet.net is a national help center helping the military community with their everyday needs. Whether you need a realtor, an attorney, discounted services, or information on retirement benefits, financial resources, and much more, our vast network of hand-picked qualified service providers are waiting to help you. With up-to-date military news and resources, you can find answers to all your needs at HealthVet.net. HealthVet.net. Never forget, never forgotten.
Friends, Adam here, Patriot Foods, U.S. only company. Frozen fruits and vegetables straight from our dirt, not overseas. Support the U.S. farmer. When you shop at patriotfoods.com, we give back to a military family in need. We got to take care of each other, my friends. We have to. So important. 10% off patriotfoods.com. 10% off promo code FREEDOM and shop today.
Welcome back to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gilm. Troops, I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or comment on Facebook. It's a pleasure to welcome to the show Dr. John Littell. He served our nation in more ways than one, and he's fighting a battle now on behalf of our nation's medical personnel. Welcome, John. Glad you could join us.
Danny, I'm glad I could be here to spend some time with a patriot and share my story with fellow patriots out there in America and elsewhere.
Tell us about your time in the Army, and where did you serve? What'd you do?
I was very fortunate to have served in the Army once I got into medical school, quite honestly. And thanks to the influence of a famous president named Ronald Reagan, he beefed up the military scholarships. And, you know, I came from a family of folks who served in the military, but also I frankly needed a way to pay for country. My mother at that time was a school bus driver, a single mom, and no way I could afford George Washington University. 12 years old after my parents' divorce was a priest named Father Tom Malloy, went on to become Colonel Tom Malloy. He was a amazing role model for me as a young man, as a priest, and also in the military. He's the one who said, Johnny, you should join the Army and become an Army doctor. And long story short, I did. And thanks to his influence, I got stationed after medical school. I got into Fort Lewis, met my lovely wife of now 34 years. She was an Army nurse at Fort Lewis, got to go over to Fort Gordon for several years, and then got deployed during Desert Shield and then Desert Storm. And also another deployment to Guantanamo Bay when we were taking care of Haitian refugees during, it was a joint task force mission. And so I'll tell you what I tell people every day about my military service as a physician. You talk about be all you could be. I mean, family doctors in the Army at that time were prepared to run the entire hospital from emergency room to labor and delivery to the intensive care unit. They would say to me, you know, Dr. Littell, you need to learn how to do everything. And we did. And I'm so thankful for that experience. And it really, to be honest, especially with what happened these last 3 years with COVID, I'm like one of the last men standing when it comes to doing hospital work for patients, because that was my training. My training in the military was never to abandon a patient. What's also my vocation as a doctor, never abandon a patient. So I was prepared for this time. And I'm, again, it gives me an opportunity to meet wonderful folks like you and your audience.
And you are obviously a practicing doctor now, right?
Yeah, I guess I'll be practicing a lot longer. We're remodeling a whole new building right here in Ocala, Florida to take me on into the twilight of my career, but I'm working as hard as ever, sometimes 40 patients a day. That's not something I'm proud of or even wanting to do, but it's meeting the demand until I can get some young blood in here to help me out. But yeah, I'm working hard, and I'm thankful to God that I have the energy and everything else it takes to still care for my patients.
Well, certainly we need to appreciate our medical people, particularly when they're shorthanded like your situation is. And I'm sure you're not alone in that, because, you know, I don't really need medical help until I need it, but I want it then. And so, yeah, you're in a position that we need to take care of. This is Colonel Danny Gilliam on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Army vet Dr. John Littell. John, the medical community, the people in it, they're living a tough life right now. There are all kinds of things going on that the medical community has to put up with that don't make any sense, that have to be keeping people from joining or getting them out sooner than they would otherwise. Talk about that, because that's something we, the people, need to take care of. You know, we defend a country, but if the people in the country we defended can't get medical care or get bad medical care, that's not what our military is about. So talk to us about the battle that you're fighting now.
Yeah, well, the battle in the ranks of the medical profession is, I hate to say it, I sometimes feel like the battle already happened and we lost, because or the war, because frankly, it was the war for the hearts and minds of future physicians and other healthcare workers. And what happened over the last 20 years or so is that they weaned out so many of amazing doctors. They weaned increasingly depersonalized, increasingly beholden to the agencies such as CDC, FDA, the hospitals, insurance companies, who pretty much write the script for how we are supposed to take care of patients. which gets rid of all creativity and independent thinking. I've been complaining about this for 25 years, ever since I got out of the military, practically. And so what you see in the hospital setting right now, for be creative about how to care for patients, and this was always the case with COVID, they shut down the dialogue because everyone had to follow protocols, CDC protocols. And we all know how important protocol is in the military, but dang it, I mean, the greatest leaders in the history of the military were not people who observed protocol. And the greatest leaders in medicine nowadays certainly are not the ones who observe protocol. It's, you know, guidelines and protocols are there maybe for the majority of cases, but when the protocols start to be dictated by people who are also in the pockets of or the big pharma companies and the vaccine companies, boy, it's a mess. So how I try to give people some hope, but it's hard because when I walk into the hospital, first of all, the people who take care of you in the office don't go to the hospitals anymore. That's a trend that started again 20 years ago. It became a lifestyle issue. People didn't want to have to go to the hospital after work or in the morning before they saw their patients or over lunchtime. So they gave it to the hospitalists. Well, the hospitalists are almost 100% lockstep with the hospitals themselves. So when patients were clamoring for new remedies, for drugs, for COVID, they said, please try ivermectin, please try high dose anticoagulants and steroids, all of these medications that they were not getting. The hospital said, no, I can't. This is not our protocol. So yeah, it's very frustrating for men and women who have the ability to think independently, creatively, and even who have just basic Judeo-Christian values at times to practice in today's healthcare system. And I'm sorry to say, it sounds really sad. There's some good stuff out there, but it's stifled. It's being stifled for the most part.
John, it sounds to me like you're saying that if I came to you as a patient and you do the normal thing and you check things out and you've discerned from my history and who I am that I need something non-typical in order to heal. You figured it, you're pretty sure you're right. You can't do that because it doesn't follow the protocol. So we've got to have a one size fits all kind of thing. Is that what you're saying?
Well, that's how it's become. Yeah. In the hospital industry, especially once you get into the four walls of those hospitals, they have a process by which they approve or disapprove remedies, drugs, protocols. And so you're really bucking a pretty big system. The pharmaceutical companies, the vaccine manufacturers, they all negotiate with the hospitals to get their drug in or keep other drugs out. So the least safe place to be right now, if you're sick in this country, is a hospital. Having said that, what are people doing? They're turning to alternative, holistic, integrative, functional, whatever, naturopathic doctors. And I get nervous because I see that every day. I have a clinic right next to my office where I'm sitting right now that promises they can cure everything from HIV to multiple sclerosis to ADD in kids. And of course, he's a physician with an MD after his name, but he's a quack. But people are paying thousands of dollars to this guy and they're getting treatments that are actually in many cases dangerous. But the reason they're doing this is they're rejecting traditional medicine. They've given up on their real docs. Because many of the real docs just checked out during COVID, if you recall. I mean, it was the first time in the history of medicine that physicians refused to see people who were sick. First time in my career, that's for dang sure. It just never happened. When HIV came out, when we had AIDS patients in the hospitals, those were my very first patients. We didn't know what they had. We knew they had various infectious ailments, and we didn't know how they were getting them. But no one said, don't go into the room of Mr. Smith in 301 because he has a disease that we don't know anything about, you know?
So
no, you went and took care of these people. What happened with COVID? Doctors were told they didn't have to go in those rooms. Same thing in their offices. They shut down their offices. So it's been a real dereliction of duty on the part of most of the medical profession during COVID.
What can we citizens do about this? Is there anything?
Well, I always try to inject some hope. So pray for young blood, pray for new blood. I mean, this is a generational thing. You know, there are young men and women of conscience coming up in the ranks. Their brains haven't been turned into mush by a public education system that is, as you know, all about destroying their creative thinking. So, you know, I would just say we need to, hey, I'll tell you what you can do legislatively. What I discovered last night at a very important call from across the country with other doctors, every state funds their medical schools. And if medical schools are rejecting candidates because they refuse to get the vaccine, just like the military went through all this. But if, informed young men and women who said, I'm not going to put this experimental shot in my arm, and they were kicked out of medical schools or they were refused funding. Well, every state has the ability to turn away the funding, to reject the funding for those medical schools. And the same thing for hospitals that discriminate. So here in the state of Florida, we're starting. The ship is turning a bit. Governor DeSantis has been supporting medical freedom And we're starting to see, it's not there yet, but the ability to defund any agency, hospital, medical school that denies basic freedoms to their students, to their doctors, to the patients. That's what we need to start legislatively at your local level. And then just wake up to the fact that when you go to the medical doctors you're seeing, you ask them, hey, are you a dues-paying member of the AMA or American College of OBGYN or American Academy of Pediatrics? If they are, they're feeding the beast. They are feeding the beast. These agencies, these American academies have all bought into the woke agenda of transgenderism, of pushing shots, of killing babies, you name it. And it's all because of another major problem that we don't have time to talk about today, in, you know, a whole worldwide assault on fertility, on freedom, on our families. I'm awake to that. I'm very much awake to that because as a family doctor, I have seen it. And it's getting worse, my friends. So, yeah. So protect our rights as Christian. In my case, I'm, you know, Christian men and women to support your families. And then if you want to become a physician in this country, you should not be forced to get experimental shots in order to get into these medical schools or to work in a hospital. So indeed, I think legislatively, we have hope.
That's great. John, we're out of time. How can listeners get in touch with you if they'd like to?
Well, you know, I'm new to social media in a lot of respects, but John Littell, MD, two T's and two L's, is my website, johnlittellmd.com. And then if you do Twitter, there's a Twitter at @JohnLittellMD. And there's actually a Give, Send, Go, which I'm not asking for a lot of money, but a lot of prayers come through that. It's not GoFundMe. It's Give, Send, Go. And we're raising money for the legal battle, which is following, because I actually lost my board certification over all this. And we're trying to get the powers that be to allow me to be a family doctor. So bottom line is there's three things. My website, johnlittellmd.com. The Twitter, which I'll try to respond and get things out that are important at @JohnLittellMD. And then it's Give, Send, Go. Just look for Dr. Littell to be able to find out what's going on in our legal battle.
Thank you, brother. Thank you, John, for your service to our nation in and out of uniform, especially the fight you're battling now. God bless you.
Danny, God bless you for your work. God bless America. And I tell you, I'm thankful to be alive in this great world that God created. And we are going to keep fighting, aren't we?
Amen. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Next up, it's time for our weekly mailbag. Then it's military history time. You're reporting for duty to Front Lines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Let's do some more push-ups. How about 60 this time? I want your Ranger ready. Then stand at ease.
From ending our nation's endless wars, to making sure veterans get the care they deserve, to addressing our country's out-of-control spending problem, Concerned Veterans for America is taking on the most important issues facing our nation. You can help CVA shape a better future for Americans everywhere. Visit cv4a.org to learn more, see how you can get involved, and join our movement. That's cv4a.org.
Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Front Lines of Freedom. And it's mailbag time, team. I welcome comments from you, our listeners. Do send your thoughts to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. Skip, what's the first one?
Well, Colonel, Charlie, a Navy vet and a high school teacher, was really impressed by the discussion on how to truly interpret our Constitution. Everything made sense, but he'd never thought of things that way before.
Charlie, I know what you mean. I know exactly what you mean. I felt the same way.
And Cheryl read about the seized oil tanker in your newsletter. She read that the second oil tanker has been captured by Iran and that 12 men swarmed the ship to take it over. It's a big ship, and those guys would have gotten on one at a time, you'd think, even if they were lowered by helicopter. Why wouldn't the crew have at least socked them in the nose and tossed them overboard as they landed? Why wouldn't the captain, seeing the boat approach, turn and ram it? Why no defense at all?
Cheryl, you ask a good question. And I do not have an answer. I don't have a clue. I wonder what the answer is.
Well, Colonel, it's disgusting when I read things like that. But, you know, we're doing the same thing in our own country. I mean, defunding police, and police are afraid to go into neighborhoods, afraid to do their job. It's just, it's crazy universe out there.
Yes. And it's not a good place to be a vulnerable person. Okay, it's time for military history. Take us there, Skip.
Well, on 18 May, 1863, Union General Ulysses Grant surrounded Vicksburg, the last Confederate stronghold on the Mississippi River, in one of the most brilliant campaigns of the war. On May 16th, Grant fought the Confederates under John Pemberton at Champion Hill and defeated them decisively. He then attacked at the Big Black River the next day, and Pemberton fled into Vicksburg. Pemberton was stuck in Vicksburg, although his forces would hold out until July 4. In the 3 weeks since Grant crossed the Mississippi to capture Vicksburg, his men marched 180 miles and won 5 battles. They took nearly 100 Confederate artillery pieces and nearly 6,000 prisoners, all with relatively light losses.
Sounds like a good deal to me for the Union. And on the 15th of May, 1942, during World War II, a bill establishing the U.S. Army Women's Corps became law, creating the Women's Auxiliary Army Corps, granting women official military status. The WACS performed a wide variety of jobs, which ranged from clerk to radio operator, electrician to air traffic controller. Women served in virtually every theater of engagement. It would take until 1978 before the Army would become sexually integrated, and it would not be until 1980 that the 16,000 women who had joined the earlier Women's Auxiliary Army Corps would receive veterans' benefits. And on the 18th of May, 1943, again World War II, Adolf Hitler launched Operation Alaric, the German occupation of Italy, in the event that its Axis partner either surrendered or switched its alliance, which did happen. The operation was so top secret that Hitler didn't even issue a written order. Instead, he communicated verbally that Field Marshal Rommel should assemble and ultimately command 11 divisions for the occupation of Italy to prevent an Allied foothold on the peninsula. And on the 19th of May, 1967, during the Cold War, the Soviets ratified one of the first major treaties designed to limit the spread of nuclear weapons. It banned nuclear weapons from outer space. The U.S., Great Britain, and several other nations had already ratified the treaty. With the advent of the so-called space race between the U.S. and Soviets, which had begun in 1957 when the Russians successfully launched the Sputnik satellite, some began to fear that outer space might be the next frontier for the expansion of nuclear weapons. To forestall that, an effort directed by the UN came to fruition in January 1967 with this treaty. The agreement also banned weapons from using the moon, other planets, or any other celestial bodies as military outposts or bases. In 1959, dozens of nations, including the U.S. and the Soviet Union, had agreed to ban nuclear weapons from Antarctica. And in July 1963, the Limited Test Ban Treaty was signed, banning open air and underwater nuclear tests. Now, outer space was also officially declared off limits to nuclear weapons. However, we now have a number of rogue-type nations who have or may soon have nukes. We don't know what they will do.
And on 16 May, 1968, Donald Ballard, a U.S. Navy corpsman, was awarded the Medal of Honor for action in Vietnam. Ballard was a corpsman with Company M, 3rd Battalion, 4th Marines. He had just finished evacuating 2 Marines when his unit was hit by a Viet Cong ambush. Racing to the aid of a casualty, Ballard applied a field dressing and was directing 4 Marines in the removal of the wounded man when an enemy tossed a grenade into the group. With a warning shout of, "Grenade!" Ballard vaulted over the stretcher and pulled the grenade under his body. The grenade didn't go off. Nevertheless, he received the Medal of Honor for his selfless act of courage. Ballard was only the second man whose valor was rewarded, despite the fact that the grenade didn't actually explode.
Hey, it wasn't his fault.
That's right.
Yeah, no, I salute that young man. And that's military history for today. So now it's time for our self-defense report. Take us there, Skip.
All of us here at Front Lines of Freedom believe strongly in your right to keep and bear arms for protection of yourself and your family. We hope you're cocked, locked, and ready to rock, as many of us are. But if you're not, now is the time to start looking into it and learning the skills necessary to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Well, 26-year-old Lance Bush from St. Louis decided to steal a car in Maryland Heights and then go on a crime spree in St. Charles, Missouri. But his one-man crime spree ended abruptly when he entered a Quick Trip gas station and held a knife to the female clerk's throat, demanding money. A customer watching the events unfold from inside his car. He was a concealed carry holder and decided to intervene. He entered the Quick Trip, and the robber left the woman and ran toward the customer, who immediately drew his pistol and shot the man 4 times. Police arrived at the scene, and the robber was taken to a hospital where he was pronounced dead.
Thanks, Colonel. This story was of particular interest to me because it has a personal element. You see, my son and his family live in St. Charles, and this Quick Trip isn't far from their home. My son routinely carries his pistol, so this very well could have been him. Thankfully, though, it was not. This customer did some really good things in this intervention. Let's go over a few of them right now. First, he paid attention to his surroundings while in the parking lot. Most people don't do that and end up being surprised by crime. Second, he watched from outside and accurately determined that a violent robbery was in progress. Before we intervene in someone else's troubles, we need to know for sure who the good guy is and who the bad guy is. In this case, it was fairly easy. The bad guy had a knife to the clerk's throat, but it's not always that obvious. Third, when he intervened, he didn't just rush in where angels fear to tread. He opened the door, stuck his head inside, using the door frame for cover. This gave him the option of running away if he needed to. And fourth, he verified verbally that the woman was in danger and needed help. And finally, when the robber rushed toward him, he didn't hesitate to shoot until the threat stopped. His shots were all on target, and then he told the clerk to call 911 and request police and ambulance. All in all, this man did a great job defending this lady clerk from a violent, habitual offender, effectively ending his crime spree. Front Lines of Freedom gives this man an A+, and thanks him for his courage and willingness to protect the innocent among us. If more honest citizens were trained and armed, then America would be a much safer place for our families.
Yes, indeed. Our movie of the month is the World War II Codebreakers Who Saved America. You can go to the Front Lines of Freedom website, go to the blog and get the link. You can watch it for free. We're going to review it at the end of the month, and I'd appreciate getting your comments. Send them to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com. Next week on Front Lines of Freedom, Israeli Defense Major Elliot Chodoff will return to discuss the situation in Israel, and Colonel Tony Monaco will introduce Patriot Outreach. Then Marine vet Kelly Cooper from Arizona will share his story and his plans, and General Chris Petty will present the Battle of the Month. Our book, Front Lines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation, and it's now available in Spanish. You can purchase this book on frontlinesoffreedom.com. Please help us get this call to action book into the hands of all Americans.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Front Lines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the front lines of freedom. And may God bless and protect all members of law enforcement in our great land and their families and the retired officers. We honor you, and happy Mother's Day to mothers everywhere. Stand tall, be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information that you won't get anywhere else on the front lines of freedom. Dismissed.